Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan. It's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the latest moments of the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you are here. Big hour coming your way. Big day. I mean, we're going to see Christopher Wray testify in front of Capitol Hill tonight. We're going to see the President of the United States. And in between, we're going to see Prime Minister Netanyahu address a joint session of Congress. And there's tons of protests, even last night. So we'll discuss that. Brett Baer standing by and Emily Schrader. She's an Israeli journalist, human rights activist. She'll be telling us what's going on in Israel and are they closer to a peace deal, a ceasefire deal, I should say. So before we get to Brett, let's get to the big three.
Now with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's Big Three.
Number three.
This is an astounding bad decision not to appear behind Bibi as vice president of the United States. This is really her first major foreign policy decision. And she's gotten an F.
Right. She'd rather speak to a sorority in July than go behind the prime minister of our premier ally in the world. I'm talking about the Vice President Kamala Harris. Protests and boycotts surround the prime minister's address and the joint session of Congress, while dozens of Democrats snub him, most notably the vice president, we'll discuss.
Number two.
Why haven't they held a single press conference? The only press conference that was out there was done by the locals. And then the things they told us were lies. They said they didn't know the name of the shooter. They did. They said he was 20 years old. How'd they know he was 20 years old if they didn't know the name of the shooter? So why can't they come clean?
Right, exactly. Assassination investigation marches forward and collects the resignation of the Secret Service director along the way. New footage shows many mistakes were made. Plus, we have more facts about the case as they bring you to the rooftop right after the shooting. We'll discuss.
Number one.
We have 105 days until Election Day, and in that time, we've got some work to do. So hear me when I say, I know Donald Trump's type. I promise you, I will proudly put my record against his any day of the week.
Vice President Harris wastes no time grabbing the nomination from Clueless Joe in front of 3,000 plus attacks, and the attacks on Trump were plenty. The 45 rapid response team fired back as Joe Biden will explain finally tonight why he, in fact, is leaving the office. From the Oval Office, he'll be leaving and not running for re-election. Brett Baer will be anchoring the coverage of pre- and post-game on this. Hey, Brett, how long do you think this address lasts? What do you think it will contain?
You know, I don't know, Brian. The past 3 weeks have proven that predictions really don't work really well. But I think he's going to try to say that he's going to finish his term, focus on foreign policy, try to get big things done, and instill some confidence that he's up to the job. If I had to guess, I'm going to be anchoring with Martha for the speech itself. I'll be at the White House for the speech. But I think, listen, it's historic times. And, you know, there's a lot of people, including the Speaker of the House, who say if you can't be a candidate and you've stepped down for some reason, how can you continue your term for 5 months?
Right. I mean, I found it just astounding to see the press secretary on The View saying, why would anyone bring up that he shouldn't finish his term? Why would we even bring that up? Of course we know we should bring it up, because the only reason he's not running for re-election is because he physically can't do it. Are they really trying to sell us, Brett, on President Biden's unpopularity? Because they are also telling us with the same breath he's the most successful president ever.
Yeah. And, you know, the whole thing about he runs circles around us and all of those answers really don't hold water after the debate on June 27th. And think about how much has happened since that time, June 27th. It seems like a year ago. But everybody saw it. And obviously we've heard anecdotal stories and anonymous sourced pieces that go back all the way to 2021, where there was real concern about his capacity up on Capitol Hill and elsewhere.
So it's fascinating to see Kamala Harris very good at the podium, very good off the teleprompter. Where it all came apart for her last time was at the interviews on policies at the town halls. I don't know how much she'll expose herself to that. But one thing that former Speaker Kevin McCarthy brought up, that Republicans so far have been going about attacking her the wrong way. Listen, cut 20.
two attacks I've heard Republicans give that are totally stupid and dumb to do is the DEI attack. Mm. Okay. The other attack that I would not do is saying that the president has to resign.
Interesting.
That would be an advantage for Kamala. Air Force One is very powerful when it lands somewhere. And you know what? Something will happen between now and the election, a hurricane or something else, and she'll be able to present herself as a leader. Or maybe there's some foreign policy. That is a mistake for any leader to go out and say that on the Republican side. This DEI, that seems like a petty. Look, I disagree with DEI, but she is the vice president of the United States. She is the former U.S. senator. These congressmen that are saying it, they're wrong in their own instance.
All right.
Have you heard that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's and a lot of the experts that we've talked to say that's exactly the wrong approach to take. In fact, it could shift different voting blocks towards her in a kind of sympathy way. But listen, they're trying to figure out exactly what the approach is. I think they really did believe that they were going to run against Joe Biden. So they're retooling their attack mechanism. I think you're going to see a lot of those clips from the early days when she was running in 2019, where she said health care for all, including illegal immigrants, where she said no fracking in a place like Pennsylvania. Remember, I mean, those positions were not popular, and even in the Democratic Party, and she didn't make it to the Iowa caucuses.
Right, and that's really the last time we remember her, and then she was by the way, Joe Biden wasn't successful running for president in the past either until the one time after South Carolina. But we remember she got rescued and President Obama rescued Joe Biden. It seems like President Biden rescued Vice President Harris. So she's going to be a little different in terms of the praise that she got. Not unexpected. Cut six.
Harris made her first official campaign stop. And she did it with a delicious, and I mean delicious, dose of trolling Donald Trump and the Republicans.
She understands what her message is. She understands message discipline. And she's an extraordinary candidate on the trail.
Free at last, free at last. Kamala Harris is unleashed. She's just brilliant. She's just the energy that's coming off of her is the energy that's coming off of the American people. Look, I mean, this is 2008 vibes already.
So not unexpected. I'm wondering, you know, the way they were treating Joe Biden over the last month, they just was pointing out all the mistakes he was making, all the inconsistencies he was relaying. They were really going all out. I was wondering if there was possibly going to have the same aggressive approach to the vice president. I guess I got my answer.
Yeah, no, there's a bounce back here, and the honeymoon is in full effect. And, you know, she's the best thing ever until she's not. So we'll see. We'll see how she does. And maybe she's come into her own and learned a lot. But, you know, her interactions one-on-one with people, she's had some staff turnover in her office of stories of, you know, tough dealings inside her office. And, you know, we've seen her extemporaneously not deliver the punch. So we'll see if she's changed on the trail.
All right. So the assassination attempt, we're getting more information in actually from actual video. And it's pretty amazing. Think about this. I can't show you, but you can listen. This is the rooftop. It looks like a Secret Service agent talking to a police officer. Next to them is the dead body of the killer, of the assassin. This is moments after his death. Cut 39.
Yes, yeah, Beaver County sniper seen and sent the pictures out. This is him.
Okay.
That's the sniper that sent the original pictures and seen him come from the bike and set the book back down and then lost sight of him.
Okay.
He's the one that sent the pictures out. I don't know if you got the same ones I did.
I think I did, yeah. He's like got his glasses on.
So we had the picture of that.
I got that.
Okay, and then this was this is his bike with the stuff. And our sniper seen him walking away from that, I believe.
Okay.
But he would be right inside that window. He's the one that physically seen this, sent the pictures, and called it out.
Okay.
Right. But they did lose him. And the next thing you know, he was shooting. 8 shots rang out. 2 were returned. 1 killed him. So, Brett, this thing is really unfolding quick. Do you think that Christopher Wray will be more forthcoming than the former Secret Service director today?
He has to have something, you know. I saw Jay Johnson, former Homeland Security Secretary, on your show on Fox and Friends, saying you had to go to these hearings with a nugget or two to satisfy some of the questions, or to at least bring something to the table. The investigation can still go on, but 60 days is not acceptable because there are so many answers that are hanging out there that people on the ground saw with their own eyes. And so there's a disconnect here, and the fact that they haven't had any press conferences, any details, is really shady, and people worry that because the Secret Service director resigned that you're not going to get an answer at all.
So it's got a 20-year-old kid. Brett, you know this. You cover more than anybody. They go, we don't know who it is, but we know he's 20. Excuse me? He has no ID, but we know he's 20 years old. Right away, I'm saying to myself, we're not learning everything. What do they know? They say, we don't know his name. We don't know if the bottom didn't have any ID on him. But you know his exact age. That's bizarre. Then we find out that there's three. He was involved with three encrypted platforms, three separate countries. Now, it could be a gamer. I don't do that. But, you know, you play against other people. That could be one thing. But he used one of those encrypted message platforms right before he went into a shooting spree. So I think that that's an answer that we really need to know. Is this a kid that was bullied as a 20-year-old in high school, and this is his way of trying to make his mark in the world? We've seen that pattern before. Or is it something else? I mean, I think that we need – I think everybody's in the agreement, even the who you had yesterday, the amazing thing you did, Brett, Jamie Raskin and James Comer together agreeing that we need an investigation on this. Should we have a reason to hope that we're going to get answers?
Well, I think that they're not going to let go. And looking at that oversight committee, I just think that there are too many people who are, you know, in the know that are asking questions. And the former president wants answers, too. And you saw that in that interview with Jesse Waters.
All right. That was pretty amazing to see Raskin and Comer. They, for the most part, all they've done is snipe at each other for the last 2 years.
Yeah, the common ground lasted for about 3 minutes. the other 4 minutes of the interview kind of went south as far as common ground goes. But it was interesting nonetheless.
Right. Let's hear it. Let's listen.
I believe the American people know a lot more about what the Bidens have done because of our work.
I'll just say, well, I think Chairman Comer did a magnificent job exonerating Joe Biden of all the fraudulent charges that were raised against him in this Congress. And, of course, there was no high crime, no misdemeanor. Joe Biden is a passionate public servant filled with integrity.
Nobody's buying that. Nobody's buying what he's selling on that.
America's buying it. The reservoir of love for Joe Biden is deep and really bottomless in America.
You do disagree on a lot of things, as we can point out, but you do agree on some things that you work together on, and one of them was yesterday.
You saved it, Brett.
I was trying to get it back on the rails.
All right. When do we see you on the air tonight?
I'm going to be on America Reports around the Netanyahu speech with John and Sandra, and then I'll be doing the show from the White House and then the speech at 8 o'clock.
All right. Put in your overtime. Just fill out those forms, okay?
All right.
Brett Baer, thank you. 1-866-408-7669. We're going to come back and take your phone calls. A lot of breaking news and a lot of news to analyze, review, and preview. And Emily Schrader will find out what's going on in Israel. They seem to be close to some type of ceasefire deal. Are we strong-arming the Israelis who desperately need to wipe out Hamas before any of this offensive slows down? This is Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hear the ins and outs of the 2024 election right here. The Brian Kilmeade Show.
The world of business moves fast. Stay on top of it with the Fox Business Rundown. Listen to the Fox Business Rundown every Monday and Friday at foxbusinesspodcasts.com or wherever you download your favorite podcasts. From his mouth to your ears, it's Brian Kilmeade.
You're going to look real crazy being on the other side of that line, particularly as a person of color. But really as anyone who claims to have any connection to the culture, you're going to look real weird and real lonely on that side.
All right. That is a ridiculous host. Joy Reid from MSNBC, and she's explained to you that if you're black and you don't vote for her, you're going to look ridiculous. Can we get past this? I don't think we should be talking about the gender. Forget about the race. The DEI probably is not smart either. You know, just, I mean, you could talk about where you stand, but just look. Vice President of the United States, you heard Kevin McCarthy. His instincts are great. His knowledge of politics is tremendous. His success rate's phenomenal. Just couldn't negotiate Matt Gaetz. And he's saying, when you go after her, it's very easy to go after her. She's very vulnerable in her policies, her execution, her ability to think on her feet. But what she's very good at is giving speeches. And she's good at delivering lines. What she's bad at is when the prompter's not on. And the ability to study, to retain people, the viciousness, the horrible way she treats her people. These are the reports. But the other stuff, understand, she's going to be much more formidable than Joe Biden. There's no question about it. This was a win for Donald Trump. This will be harder, but I still think he's favored to win. They're looking at the polls right now. So Reuters did a quick poll. It shows Harris beating Trump 44-42. Okay. NPR did a poll. It shows Trump up over Harris with independents 46-32 with 5% undecided. And overall, has Trump up on Harris 46-45. So real tough. And as we know with the national polls, it doesn't matter. You got to go into those states in particular and see what goes on. What Kamala Harris is looking to do is burnish her pro-Gaza, pro-Hamas standing by not showing up today when the Israeli prime minister comes to speak. So she won't be there. Instead, it's going to be somebody else. Another senator is going to be sitting behind her. Great. That's going to look terrible. And by the way, the Israelis are fully insulted. They also know between 16 and 20 Democratic lawmakers aren't showing up either, which this is an ally. What else are you doing that's more important? For Kamala Harris, you know what she's doing? She's visiting a black sorority. I'm sorry, but if there's anything that you can reschedule, it's that, especially in July. I get the sense there'll be better attendance when it's not July. Now, listen to what she says as her attack on Trump. Cut one.
We have 105 days until Election Day, and in that time, we've got some work to do. We're not afraid of hard work. We like hard work, don't we? And we will win this election. So as Leah told you, before I was elected vice president, before I was elected United States Senator, I was elected Attorney General of the state of California, and I was a courtroom prosecutor before then. And in those roles, I took on perpetrators of all kinds. Predators who abused women, fraudsters who ripped off consumers, cheaters who broke the rules for their own gain. So hear me when I say, I know Donald Trump's type. And in this campaign, I promise you, I will proudly put my record against his any day of the week.
We'll see. You've never created a job. You've never had a business. Never earned more than $149,000. You also went out and never won an election, national election. Never really been popular even in your own state. So we do think the President Trump is proud of his 4 years in office. Can't run from it. And he's willing to put it up. That's what the president should do, the former president should do. Yeah, take my 4 years. I want you to back up what Joe Biden did. And then we'll let the people vote.
A talk show that's real. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
It's amazing. These protesters are being applauded today by Hezbollah, by Hamas, Islamic Jihad, Iran, Sinwar. That's really what they're accomplishing. Sinwar is thrilled to see what's going on in America. And it is shameful. It is pathetic that the vice president will not be at the joint session of Congress. Again, it gives a victory to Israel's enemies while Israel is fighting really for its survival on so many different fronts.
Really, I mean, think about it. Yemen's just sent these, the Houthi rebels located in Yemen, just sent these armed drones into Tel Aviv. Hezbollah rocketing back and forth, really, since the battle began in Hamas, since they perpetrated this attack on October 7th, forcing tens of thousands of Israelis off the northern border. And then the whole country's been on the militarized. Armed up since the October 7th attack and going into Gaza to rout out Hamas, who has got these sophisticated tunnels and they just leave their people out there as sitting ducks. It's an extremely tough battlefield in every way, and it's amazing that these clueless protesters on all these college campuses who brought themselves down to the Capitol Hill Rotunda yesterday outside Benjamin Netanyahu's Watergate Hotel last night and promised to protest today feel as though they understand what's going on in the Middle East. If you feel like you understand, Gaza's got some apartments available. Why don't you move in and be part of that great culture, the terrorist culture? Because you know who despises the other Palestinians? Hamas, because they used them as human shields. So we're going to wait for the prime minister to speak today, this afternoon at 2 o'clock. Emily Schrader joins us now, an Israeli journalist. Emily, welcome back.
Always glad to be back. Thanks for having me.
So, Emily, how bad does this look in Israel when you see these protesters showing up here in America?
Well, I mean, I think it's extremely concerning what we see going on with the protests in the United States. And I really want to differentiate between two different kinds of protests. There are the protests of some of the families of hostages. There's a big internal debate about what Israel should compromise, how much, and when. That's been an ongoing issue for many months. I think it's an issue that any country at war would deal with. And we do see a little bit of that protest. But these are not protests against Israel. We support the state of Israel. We support, the IDF that is on the front lines, the Arabs and Jews who are heroically fighting for our freedom and, frankly, for the freedom of Palestinians, if you think about it, what they're living under with this terrorist dictatorship that's been controlling Gaza for years. But then there's also the anti-Israel protests, and that's what's really concerning in Washington, D.C. right now. These groups, some of them even claiming to be Jewish, Jewish Voice for Peace, not so aptly named since there's really a minimal number of Jews who have ever been involved with such organization. But nonetheless, they love to say, as a Jew, condemning Israel. So this is something we've seen. It's not a new phenomenon, and it's something that has grown since October 7th. And a lot of this is rooted in anti-Semitism. It is rooted in denying Israel's right to self-defense. And I think the thing that's most interesting about it is they're not just protesting against Israel. They're protesting against America. To be against Israel at this juncture with the Houthis and what they've been doing with Hezbollah. Hezbollah is responsible for hundreds of American soldiers dying. Does the American public forget this? Do those protesters not know that? I mean, this is something that's just unconscionable for me as an Israeli and as an American myself.
And Iran, we find out, is financing a lot of this unrest here. When you get saluted by the Grand Ayatollah, you know you're on the wrong side. But Democrats are afraid. They're afraid of November. And they're afraid of losing states like Michigan or their district because of the Palestinian pro-Arab sentiment.
I mean, I think that that's not actually such a concern because I don't believe that they're going to get those votes anyway. I mean, we're talking about a very, very radical anti-American perspective that's represented by, 10-15% of the Democratic Party. So I think if they're pandering to these radicals, they're not going to get anywhere, electorally speaking. But beyond that, if the Democrats wanted to win more elections, then maybe they should have had better policies. We've had 4 years of absolute chaos from Joe Biden. He has left the world worse off, or will be leaving the world worse off than when he came into office. He's reversed all of the good international policy that was put into place by President Trump. And he continues to defend. I mean, we even see Kamala Harris trying to defend, Biden and her record when it comes to foreign policy after Afghanistan. This is something a lot of people are talking about now when it comes to human rights violations in Iran, the gender apartheid system that they have there. This is something that has actually expanded under Joe Biden and Kamala Harris's watch. The only president in the world who has gender apartheid expanding. When he came into office, Iran was about to fall. The Islamic Republic was about to fall. It was an absolute shambles. His policy reversed that. And not only that, then expanded. Now, Afghanistan also has gender apartheid policies. I mean, it's obscene. It's sickening.
Yeah, well, that's what we're seeing. Here's what Lindsey Graham said. He's also upset. Cut 35.
Everybody who wants to kill the state of Israel and all the Jews and wipe it off the map wants to kill us, too. We're the great Satan. So I don't understand why we would pick a group of people who would actually want to kill us. Now, she's the de facto nominee for the Democratic Party in 2024. This is an astounding bad decision not to appear behind Bibi as vice president of the United States. This is a signal to Hamas, Hezbollah, and Iran that we literally do not have Bibi's back. This is really her first major foreign policy decision, and she's gotten an F.
She will meet with him on Thursday. We know the prime minister will meet with Trump on Thursday, too, in Mar-a-Lago, and she'll meet with Biden. But they're all pushing this ceasefire deal. But evidently, Netanyahu is not on board yet. And, of course, the hostages are on everybody's mind. What do you know about the ceasefire deal?
Well, the thing is, we don't know very much yet about what the actual conditions are. That's what's still up for negotiation. There is nothing that has been finalized so far. And we know that there's a lot of debate over specific areas close to the Egyptian crossing on the Gaza side that Israel does need to control if it's ever going to have the ability to defend itself. And so there are certain technical aspects to the deal that still need to be ironed out. I think the Israeli public and the Israeli government as well doesn't have any problem making a deal. It wouldn't be the first time. In fact, almost all of our senior commanders in the army have stated that it is possible militarily to have a six-week pause in fighting, potentially more depending on what the terms entail. But some of those hostages don't have that much more time. At least the five young women soldiers who have been held for, you know, over 9 months now, the head of the Mossad stated the other day that they don't have any more time. We're speaking a number of days. We have to get them home as soon as possible. And that is the sentiment from left to right in the state of Israel. I wouldn't characterize Netanyahu as being against that. It's just a matter of what the deal actually is. And I also want to caution people in pressuring Israel when it comes to the deal. I mean, we've seen even from the Biden administration that Israel is not the problem for a deal. Israel has proposed multiple deals. They've proposed multiple pauses in fighting, different kinds of, you know, hostage for ceasefire type agreements. And it was Hamas who has rejected them. It was Hamas who walked away from negotiations. And it's been the same pattern for 75 years with the Palestinian leadership. And unfortunately, we just don't see anything changing. This terrorist organization that's controlling the Gaza Strip, it isn't actually a new policy for Palestinians. Palestinian rejectionism is the core of the conflict in the big picture, not just October 7th.
So if I went up to Fatah, Mahmoud Abbas, and I said, hey, let's work on a two-state solution, he's not interested in that. Number one, he doesn't have control of the Palestinians. Hamas has more control. And number two is they don't feel as though they want a one-state solution. That's without you guys, right?
That's absolutely correct. And I think that's been the misguided thinking from the beginning when it comes to the two-state solution. Yes, at the end of the day, I think the majority of Israelis would like to see us living side by side in peace. But the practical reality today is that there isn't a Palestinian leadership that can implement that. And if there was, then the other Palestinian factions would literally kill them, as we've seen bitter infighting between Hamas and Fatah. That's nothing new. And it's something that will continue until you see a society that is prepared to accept peace, that's prepared to make compromise. And that comes from changing your education system and teaching people what the value is of democracy, what the value is of diversity, of respecting people different than yourselves, and most importantly, of respecting that the Jewish people have a right to exist in their indigenous homeland, which is the land of Israel. And that, thus far, for 70 plus years, is what they have refused to accept.
Right. By the way, 8 Americans are still being held. Aviva Siegel, who was held for 51 days, addressed a roundtable of the House Foreign Affairs Committee. Her husband is still being held. And she told everyone that she believes that most of the hostages are underground. And she talked about how horrific her captivity was. Is that the conventional belief, that most of them being held in these tunnels?
Yes. So since day one, we've known that the tunnels have been used for transporting them to different places. There is quite an elaborate network of tunnels, as we now know, even more than what Israel knew at the beginning. In some cases, there are tunnels with three stories, tunnels you can drive a car through, tunnels with air conditioning. So the infrastructure that they built and the amount of money they wasted building this terrorist infrastructure is really, really tremendous. What we do know, the hostages have been held in absolutely atrocious conditions, mostly underground, although not all of the hostages. In addition to that, we also know that there have been incidents of sexual assault, of course, rape. We also saw yesterday something interesting related to October 7th. For the first time, there was a rape victim who came forward, who survived. In most cases in October 7th, especially at the Nova Party massacre, a lot of the Hamas terrorists who engaged in rape, in some cases gang rape, the victims didn't survive. They were killed after. In this case, there was a survivor who came forward, actually a man, who spoke at length about how sexual violence was used as a method of war. And unfortunately, we can only assume, based on what we know, as well as from testimonies of hostages who have been released and come home, that that is par for the course. That is something they're experiencing. And it is part of the reason, of course, that we're so worried and heartbroken about the young women who have been there for now over 9 months.
Wow. Unbelievable. There's so many moving parts. I know the speech will be well delivered. I know it'll be well received because the people that don't want to hear it aren't showing up. Emily Schrader, thanks so much. Appreciate your work.
Thank you so much.
You got it. When we come back, your turn. 1-866-408-7669. What do you think the president's going to say today? Now, I know it's going to last about 15 minutes. That's about as long as he can go. Do you think he's just going to say, I thought about it and I want to pass the torch, which would be not being truthful because, you know, he was pressured to do this? Do you think he's going to say, I'm not feeling well, I'm looking to step aside? Or do you think he is going to say, it wasn't my idea. It wasn't my idea, but I'm going to step aside anyway. I think I'm getting the indication he's going to go all in for Kamala Harris and make it seem like it's his idea. But we all know the reporting has been too expensive and widespread, especially here at Fox. He was kicked to the curb by the leadership led by Nancy Pelosi. And believe it or not, his good friend, Barack Obama. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Coming to you on a need-to-know basis, because, man, do you need to know. It's Brian Kilmeade. A radio show like no other. It's Brian Kilmeade.
So now that the process is played out, from the grassroots bottom up, we are here today to throw our support behind Vice President Kamala Harris. I'm clapping. You don't have to.
Please clap.
Yeah, it was amazing. Senator Schumer was like a little kid. He's so happy with the vice president, even though we both know that she's been a disaster to this point. And many people have said, speculated, the best thing Joe Biden ever did was pick her because everybody knows you can't turn the page with her. Now, because she's very good at the podium, very good reading a prompter, I think that people see a relief from a president that's literally aging before our eyes. So Democrats who watched the RNC and were just elated and worried about what they had as a united party around Donald Trump, now think they have more than hope. They think they got a legitimate shot. They definitely have a better shot than they had with Joe Biden. I don't think there's any doubt about it. But in the business community, I think that in the Hispanic community, I think when it comes to anyone in the natural fossil fuel industry, they can't be happy because of what she stands for. Anyone worried about our spending can't be happy for what she stands for. Because what she stood for before she lost the primaries in 2020 was flat out scary. And then what Joe Biden has done, we see the results, in my view, and in review of his approval rating at 36%, has been unacceptable. So I listened to Grant Cardone, a very successful CEO of Cardone Capital. It's all over our channel. He had a few things to say of what the business community thinks. Cut nine.
You're going to see fewer jobs. You're going to say AI destroyed the middle class jobs. You're going to see more of our jobs exported outside the country because we won't be able to pay the fees here. She's got a border that she was in charge of and destroyed. So how does that work for the middle class? Lower wages, higher taxes, everything we don't want as a middle class. We should be inspiring to create the wealthiest middle class and upper middle class of any country on planet Earth. And she can't do that. She does not have the experience in doing that or much of anything.
Yeah. So now she has all the endorsements except Barack Obama. And by the way, she's closest with Barack Obama. It's ridiculous to think he won't not only be close to her and supporting her, just make a dramatic probably introduction to her more than Joe Biden. I think it'll be Barack Obama. I think it'll be Barack Obama that will do it unless the protocol just look too awkward, because it looks like Barack Obama might be even be running the place. I think that he was the one who strongly recommended he name her to begin with. They've been friends for a long time. So we'll see. If you think that over the Obama years were distressing years to you and you were glad they were over. With Kamala Harris, if she wins, expect to see maybe eight more of the Obamas, of Barack Obama. I don't think Michelle, I take Michelle at her word that she really doesn't like it. But in terms of her track record, that's what the Republicans got to do. Stop. Don't talk about gender. Don't talk about race. Nobody cares. I wouldn't even bring up her laugh. Let that play in ads and let that grate on you. But I would just talk about her record. Talk about the fact that she's really demolished the whole border. Talk about how she's failed as a border czar. Talk about how she's never visited one Border Patrol agent. Talk about how she only went to the border once for 20 minutes. Talk about all those things. If the border matters to you, if she's going to run an abortion, she's going to talk about how great abortion is. Here's Ben Shapiro. He was on last night. Cut 12.
I will say the Republicans have a lot of friendly areas that they can attack here, ranging from the fact that she said openly that she wants to ban fracking to the fact that she said during the 2020 campaign that she wants to ban private health insurance. And that we're just opening the jar on Kamala Harris. The media are pretending they're enthusiastic, but there really is nothing there.
Right. This is stuff that President Trump could easily run on, easily run against. And that's what he should be doing. I like that he hopped on those conference calls yesterday. Quick note, when Prime Minister Netanyahu goes in front of a joint session of Congress, he is not going to have Kamala Harris behind him. He's not going to have J.D. Vance either. He's out on the campaign trail. People kind of understand that. The vice president is out visiting a sorority. And I think the big difference is your vice president, you should be at a joint session of Congress with our chief ally delivering a joint session address. You should be back there. Look like a leader. It's a missed opportunity. Ben Cardin's going to be there in a place. And we also now know that former Speaker Nancy Pelosi won't be there either. She's an embarrassment. Always will be. Selfish, trying to make a stand. Sooner or later, she'll be off the battlefield. And Democrats will be better because of it.
From high atop Fox News headquarters in New York City, always seeking solutions, never sowing division. It's Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the latest minutes of the Brian Kilmeade Show. Senator Shelley Moore Capito is going to be with us in a matter of moments, and Mary O'Grady will be with us, too. She writes for the America's column on the Wall Street Journal. If you want to know what's going on in Latin America, if you want to know what's going on in Central America, she's where to go. Also handles Canada. It's a weekly column, and when people talk about immigration, they say, well, this is just a trend in the world. You can't do anything about it. It doesn't matter who's president. She knows. When you talk about leaders and how they who they respect and who they fear, she knows in America. And that's why I think it's important to have her on, because we now have a brand new matchup. Vice President Kamala Harris against former President Donald Trump. Keep in mind, if you ever miss the show, not in our family of affiliates, just go to, and you want to get the podcast, go to the Fox News app. You can watch it from there. But also, you can get the podcast anywhere, especially on the app, too, and wherever you prefer to get your podcast platform. Listen to without commercials. So before we get to the senator from West Virginia, let's get to the big three.
Now with the stories you need to know, it's Brian's big three.
Number three.
This is an astounding bad decision not to appear behind Bibi as vice president of the United States. This is really her first major foreign policy decision, and she's gotten an F.
She's gotten an F, and that is Lindsey Graham. Protest boycotts surround Prime Minister Netanyahu's address to a joint session of Congress, while dozens of Dems snub him, most notably the sitting VP, who would rather address a sorority in the summer, which makes absolutely no sense. There's about 20 other Democratic legislatures who also won't be there, including Nancy Pelosi.
Number two.
Why haven't they held a single press conference? The only press conference that was out there was done by the locals. And then the things they told us were lies. They said they didn't know the name of the shooter. They did. They said he was 20 years old. How'd they know he was 20 years old if they didn't know the name of the shooter? So why can't they come clean?
Yeah, that was very strange. You know the age, but you don't know who it is. Assassination investigation marches forward and collects the resignation of the Secret Service director. But now new footage shows that Secret Service was actually on the roof minutes after the sniper was killed, the assassin was killed, and they admit on camera, and you'll hear this, that they were looking at him, and they lost him. Next thing you know, he's shooting at President Trump.
Number one.
We have 105 days until Election Day, and in that time, we've got some work to do. So hear me when I say, I know Donald Trump's tight. I promise you, I will proudly put my record against his any day of the week.
There you go. Vice President Harris wastes no time grabbing the nomination from Clueless Joe in front of 3,000-plus, goes ahead and attacks Trump twice in 2 days. The 45-team rapid response, they're there. They're looking at her record, and they're pushing Joe aside as well. He speaks tonight. Senator Shelley Maricapito. Senator, I don't remember a time when there was more impactful news. Do you?
I mean, every day it's something different, almost every hour. And normally you would say, okay, we'll do this. And then, you know, maybe a couple months later we might have something else, but not this year. It's jam-packed.
I just should inform our listeners that right now Jim Jordan is opening up the House Judiciary Committee. They're going to start asking Christopher Wray about what happened as they investigated what went wrong two Saturdays ago while Donald Trump was speaking in that Butler Field in Pennsylvania. So far, there's a lot of questions. A lot of people go down there, and now you lost a Secret Service. You lost a Secret Service director. To me, that's a good thing. You feel the same way?
Oh, I absolutely do. I mean, I think she said she had responsibility for what went on. She needed to take it. She did. But she never went the final step of this is a colossal failure on my watch and I've got to go. So she finally came to that realization, I think, after her very bipartisan, harsh questioning on Monday in the House. I thought they did a good job, you know, on both sides of the aisle to make sure that she was questioned in detail. And I don't understand why people come before Congress and think that vague answers and, oh, well, I'm under investigation, so I really can't talk about this. Why do they think that's going to satisfy anybody? That just screams cover up to everybody. And so I think as more and more things come out, who was in charge, who was answering the phone, who was listening to the locals, it's kind of not just eye-popping, it's kind of earth-shattering to realize that this incompetence was surrounding one of the most highest sought-after targets probably in this country or even in the world.
I want you to hear this, Senator. Might not have heard it because Senator Grassley released it, and then we had one of our reporters get it. Cut 39.
Yes, Beaver County sniper seen and sent the pictures out. This is him.
Okay.
That's the sniper that sent the original pictures and seen him come from the bike and set the book back down and then lost sight of him.
Okay.
He's the one that sent the pictures out. I don't know if you got the same ones I did.
I think I did, yeah. He's like got his glasses on.
So we had the picture of that.
I got that.
Okay, and then this is his bike with the stuff. And our sniper seen him walking away from that, I believe.
Okay.
But he would be right inside that window. He's the one that physically seen this, sent the pictures, and called it out.
Okay.
So the body's laying next to this agent wearing a suit and a red tie. And he's trying to say, yeah, this is the guy we were looking for. And we lost track of him. And he's dead. This is the shooter. That's his gun. We saw him with a bag and downstairs is his bike. So they've been tracking him. They lost him. They end up being the shooter. So
how do you lose a suspicious person? You know?
I know. And they say, well, we get suspicious people all the time. And the problem is they say he didn't go through the magnetometers because he was outside the perimeter. And just as a layman, I sit there and think to myself, why would this be outside the perimeter? And it turns out there's another story that I hope the FBI director talks about because he's not directly responsible. He said that there were agents on the roof, but it was too hot and they went down.
I don't understand that either. I mean, I saw where they went down and then they lost sight of him. They went down to track him. They couldn't find him. It just sounds like the Keystone Cops to me, not like the finest protection agency around the world. And for those that do it the right way, the Secret Service, and we know many, many, many of them do, this has got to be really tough for them to handle. I mean, we had Bush and we had Obama in West Virginia numerous times. And the hoops that you have to jump through to do it right are, you know, numerous and repetitive. It doesn't sound like that was the protocols at all here. And the fact that these guys had this guy's picture on their phone and then he's sitting there dead after he's basically wounded Donald Trump is just earth-shattering.
Right. So Benjamin Netanyahu is going to be speaking in about 5 hours, but he's not going to have about 20 Democratic lawmakers. Not going to have J.D. Vance can't be there. He's evidently on a campaign trip, but I don't think he's not anti-Israel. In fact, he's pro-Israel. Nancy Pelosi's anti-Netanyahu, and it looks like the vice president is choosing not to be there. Patty Murray will sit behind the prime minister. The Israelis evidently are upset. Do they have a right to be?
Yes, they do. I mean, this is one of our longest and strongest allies. They aspire and have created a free society in a very dangerous part of the world. We've supported them and they've supported us. And some of their most entrepreneurial ideas are incorporated into our defense systems, our intelligence systems, our AI systems. Were created by our friends in Israel. And we have a history of supporting Israel, both at my level in the government with funding for the IDF and others, but also, you know, diplomatically and through the intelligence community. I don't know a bigger slap in the face. If you don't show up, that's one thing. If you tell everybody in the beginning you're not going to show up because you want it to be a slap in the face, that's being delivered today to the prime minister, and that I think is very harmful to the relationship.
So, Senator, afterwards you're going to speak. After Netanyahu speaks, I imagine.
I am.
So,
yes.
Listen, we're all pro-Israel. I think most people are. But I just laugh at the fact that almost zero Americans have been in Gaza. Maybe we have four reporters. Maybe overall 20 American reporters have been walking through Gaza. We're all sitting here. I'm not doing it, but Columbia University and sitting in the rotunda. And we're deciding we know how to fight Hamas better than the IDF. I mean, think about that. We are judging them after they've been attacked and the most and 200 plus taken hostage for no reason except they were in a house or they were at a party. That's why they're being tortured right now. And we're going to sit here and judge our ally. I can't get my mind around this.
No, and I think we have no concept, and they have no concept of having right next door to you. I'm not talking 200 miles away. I'm talking 3 miles away across the border, people that wake up every day and try to figure out a way to destroy you. And when you see the brutal attacks on October the 7th, the way sexual assault was used as a weapon, some of the stories are horrifying. And somehow Israel's in the wrong here. Israel has the right to defend themselves. Look, do we all want a ceasefire and have all the hostages home? Yes, we do. But we also have to allow Israel to be able to rid themselves of the scourge of Hamas that still exists in Gaza. And I think that's a reasonable action. And so it has been difficult, and no more difficult than the state of Israel. I mean, you know, they're losing people at the same time still trying to defend their country. So I just think I don't know how this got so sideways. And I don't know if it's a personal thing with Netanyahu. I mean, if it's they don't think he has the right strategies or whatever. But it is very much a slap in the face.
Right. And I know former President Trump has put aside a little skirmish he had with Netanyahu. They're going to meet at Mar-a-Lago. Number two is it looks like President Biden and Kamala Harris are going to meet with Netanyahu at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. But my feeling is they're going to try to berate him into a ceasefire deal. So in the big picture, what is Joe Biden going to be like if he tries to hold on to his job for the next 4 or 5 months, knowing he's already leaving Israel? What do you expect him to say tonight?
I can't figure out what he is going to say. Knowing him, I think he's going to say, I'm in charge. I'm going to be in charge. I'm going to be the president for the next 6 months, and we're going to do great things as we've done the last 3.5 years, because now he's painting his legacy. I don't think he's going to admit to any weaknesses or any flaws in either him or any of his policies. And so I think he's just going to take advantage of having that spotlight to just create a history for himself that is going to make him feel better. I don't really think it's about us so much. I think it's more about him. I can just imagine him sitting there. He's mad. He's upset. And then he's like, well, then I'm going to talk to the American public. I mean, he's barely addressed us from the Oval Office, hardly at all, over 4 years. And so now it's because I don't see what the emergency is about tonight. I don't think it's going to be about Israel. Do you?
No, I think that it's going to leak out that he's going to be tough on Israel now, and he's going to personally disparage him. And I think it weakens him in his fight with Hamas. It makes Sinwar pleased. It makes Iran pleased. And I don't think they're that disappointed with that. Not that they're pro-terrorist, but they are pro-Iran. And it's not worked. I want you to hear Vice President Kamala Harris will now be the nominee. Listen to what her attack plan will be. Cut one.
We have 105 days until Election Day, and in that time, we've got some work to do. We're not afraid of hard work. We like hard work, don't we? And we will win this election. So as Leah told you, before I was elected vice president, before I was elected United States Senator, I was elected Attorney General of the state of California, and I was a courtroom prosecutor before then. And in those roles, I took on perpetrators of all kinds. Predators who abused women, fraudsters who ripped off consumers, cheaters who broke the rules for their own gain. So hear me when I say, I know Donald Trump's type.
So she goes on to say that he's a predator and a convicted criminal and felon. Your thoughts about the game plan as she and the attack plan as she lays it out?
Well, I think she's probably baiting President Trump to have this turn into a race between personalities, and I hope that the President Trump doesn't take the bait. I hope that he keeps it on where the most vulnerable part of Vice President Harris, and that's their record. She's the border czar. We have 10 million people here that have come in under the border czar's, illegally under the border czar's reign. We have an economy that's killing people at the grocery store. This is her policies as much as it is Joe Biden's. We have an international community that can't figure out where we are on certain issues. Traditionally, we've stood with Israel. Now, all of a sudden, we're gonna stand back and we're gonna be less aggressive. And we're gonna give help to Ukraine, but we're gonna tell them how they're gonna use their weapons and the best way for them to move forward, which ties their hands. And so she owns all of this. She's against fracking. She's against any kind of energy development in this country. I mean, that's all on the record. So the President Trump needs to keep this on her record, because that is not a record that's reflective or will be well received across the country.
And Senator, the one thing that when I asked him this 2 weeks ago, he was on this show. Uh-huh. And I said, what do you think? Are you going to be going against Joe Biden? And he paused and he said, I don't think it matters, because it's the policies I'm running against.
Right.
And if he stays with that team that he has, I think you're 100% right. She's going to have a lot of momentum behind her. And then things are going to settle down, and it's going to be, what type of America do you prefer, the one we've had or the one we used to have? And that's how Trump could win.
And I think the one we've had times two, because I think
it'll be worse. Yeah.
You know, she's one of the more liberal was one of the most liberal here in the Senate. She's obviously from the failed state of California in terms of regulatory and affordability and taxes and everything else. So this could be even a harsher look for America under her administration.
Well, we just had a reasonable conversation. Maybe the rest of the country can be like us. Senator Capito, thanks so much. And thanks for standing behind our ally. And I look forward to your speech on the floor today after the Prime Minister speaks.
Sounds great. Thank you.
You got it. Listen, when we come back, I'll be able to squeeze in some calls. Or you can write me, briankilmeade.com. It'll go right to my website. And this way I can get to your answers, maybe read them out loud. And keep in mind, I hope to see you in Stroudsburg on Saturday, 7 o'clock. History, Liberty, and Laughs. It's a show that's almost as good, if not better, than Hamilton. It'll surprise you, entertain you, and inform you. Don't move.
Hear the ins and outs of the 2024 election right here. The Brian Kilmeade Show. The more you listen, the more you'll know. It's Brian Kilmeade.
We're back, everybody. So in about 10 minutes, I can't wait to talk to Mary O'Grady, and here's why. She is with the Wall Street Journal, and she covers an area of the country I've never been to, Central and South America. Maybe you haven't either, but it's all over our news. I mean, why are people coming? Why are they going through the Darien Gap? Where are the Chinese coming in from? Why do they think now's the time to come? What do you mean there's mass migration? It just so happens that Joe Biden and Kamala Harris are in office at this time. It's just a coincidence. Or is the 3,000 man and woman and family caravan coming up? Because as they tell our reporters on the scene, they're coming here now because they think Trump's going to win the election and they're not going to have an opportunity before. So she handles that part of the country, and she's going to be talking about that. Also, the elections in Venezuela. You know, it turns out Maduro lost. It was losing. And they're going to burn the place down rather than leave. And then Lula, what he's doing to Brazil, basically selling his soul and Brazil's soul to China and being part of the BRICS. BRICS is a counter to the World Bank. BRICS is a counter to NATO. BRICS is a counter to EU. All of our alliances, they're coming up with their own form of trade. They're not using the dollar as currency. And Brazil, who evidently is great friends with President Biden, signed on to it. By the way, so is India, who's supposedly great friends with America, great friends with Trump, is Modi. So all this stuff needs to be corrected and addressed, but it never seems to be a priority. We'll talk about that now.
If you're interested in it, Brian's talking about it. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Kamala Harris was appointed border czar, as you know, in March of 2021, and since that time, millions and millions of illegal aliens have invaded our country, and countless Americans have been killed by migrant crime because of her willful demolition of American borders and laws. Working together with crooked Joe Biden, Kamala Harris supported a radical left policy of nationwide catch and release, halting all deportations, ending Remain in Mexico.
So the President Trump, realizing that all the publicity was going to this stunning events of the vice president being the new nominee on the left, we only find out Joe Biden's out. Then the vice president makes it clear she wants to collect all the delegates necessary to replace him. She did it, astoundingly, to her great credit. At which time, President Trump said, "Whoa, wait a second. Should we all remember one of the reasons why I rose up in the ranks in 2016 and are rising again in 2024 is because I wanted to crack down on the border. I had a much better border, and she was the border czar." Mary O'Grady writes for the America's column in the Wall Street Journal, economics as well as business in Latin America and Canada, Central America. And every Monday, you'll see her column in the Wall Street Journal. She spent more time in these regions than probably any other American reporter and offers her expertise today. I see your latest column I find fascinating about foreign lawfare coming to U.S. courts, but I'd love for you to address the biggest debate outside abortion in this country, and that's our border. Are policies of this administration responsible for the surge of the 8 million plus who have come here illegally?
Well, good morning, Brian. Nice to be here. Thanks for having me. I think my own view of the border crisis is that the asylum law that we have, which the administration did nothing to try to fix, acts like a magnet. People know that if they can get to the border, then all they have to do is say that they're here for asylum. And because the courts are so backed up, they're given safe passage into the country and told to show up, you know, some years down the line for a court hearing. So, you know, if you see that people are getting in and these caravans of people and these people who live in these countries that don't have much hope for the future have very good communication networks. So they know their cousin, their brother, their father, yep, their mother got into the country. And how did they get in? By using the asylum law. So that to me was the critical point that no one really tried to address. And it was just obvious that as long as that stayed in place, the magnet, very strong magnet, was going to continue to attract hordes of people.
And not only for Central and South America now. Now we're getting Tajikistan, China. Have we figured out what the Chinese are doing? Did they get permission to leave? Are they, you know, we keep seeing with roller bags. They don't look like a typical refugee. They come across, evidently, they're really arrogant at the border, demanding things, and they just try to meld into society. How do they get out of that oppressive country? Have you done work on that?
No, that the China, I haven't done work on how they've gotten out. But I will tell you something that I've found very frustrating over the years, and that is that if you get into South America, and if you look at a map, there's the South American continent, then there's Central America, then there's Mexico, which is part of North America, right? So if you get into South America, to get from South America into Central America, there's Colombia, which is attached to Panama,
But between the two, there is a very dense jungle called the Darien Jungle. And to get to the Darien Jungle, you need to cross the Gulf of Urabá, which is a very big body of water. And I have written columns and I've posted video because some very good journalists have been down there filming. And you see the Colombian government, the local government, helping facilitate the trafficking organizations that bring the people across the Gulf of Urabá in large boats,
Colombia.
Like 100 people. Yes, this is Colombia. And they even interview the governor of the province of Chocó, the department of Chocó. And he says, oh, yeah, we're helping move the migrants because we care about these humanitarian blah, 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 blah. I mean, Colombia doesn't want them stuck on their side. A lot of them are coming from Venezuela. But that once they get through the Darien Jungle, they're almost guaranteed to get to the Mexican border. So there's nothing that's been done about that passage of all these migrants between the southern side of the Gulf of Urabá and over to the Panamanian side. And I think that's an obvious place where, you know, a lot of these people who are not actually Latin Americans are crossing into Panama and then coming up the isthmus.
And so, Mayor, you know how it works. If our government starts pressuring them, like we were sending our Secretary of State, our Homeland Security Secretary during the previous administration, and we were putting pressure saying your aid's going to be rebuked. I need to know where the money's going anyway. It's going to be taken back unless you could control your border. And threatening tariffs on Mexico got them to put 20,000 Marines on their southern border. Well, diplomatic relations has a lot to do with it. What you just said would be invaluable to anybody looking to stop illegal immigration. Pressure Colombia's government to do that, what allies, what people with good relations usually do, correct?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure. I mean, we don't give a lot of bilateral aid anymore, but we give some, and certainly that's one of the sticks that we have, carrots and sticks that we have to influence them. But there hasn't even been much, high-profile communication about that. I mean, we haven't seen Kamala Harris, who was in charge of finding the root causes of migration, going to Colombia or shining a bright light on these trafficking organizations that bring people across the Gulf of Urabá. We just didn't see much publicity on that at all.
Yeah, it's just a lack of interest of doing that. A couple of Zoom calls, one visit to the border, and that's it. That's going to be tough for her to overcome. I want to bring to you a column, and then we'll go back to this. You talk about lawfare, which we're all witnessing now, which seems to be targeting the former president, and it's going to be used again and again. You say it's going to get really concerning because of what's happening in Colombia. As they go after somebody that may have done something 40 years ago using U.S. courts. Can you expand on that?
Well, yeah, it's quite complicated, but also pretty eye-popping. We think of civil courts in this country as places that we go to adjudicate things that have happened in this country. But in the 1990s, George H. Walker Bush signed a piece of legislation that is called the Torture Victims Protection Act. And it's designed to basically give people who were victims of torture in, say, Cuba or Iran or Uganda or some of these terrible dictatorships to be able to come and file a claim against someone who was responsible for their torture in one of these countries who is now living in the U.S. So, the crime may have happened in Cuba, but if somebody from the Castro administration is living in Key Biscayne, this would allow them to file a complaint against that person. Unfortunately, it's now being abused by three Colombians who claim that a retired Colombian colonel living in Florida, in South Florida, is responsible for the death of their father 40 years ago in a very violent assault on the Palace of Justice, on the judicial court in Bogota. And this guy, who is called Colonel Plazas, is a retired military. He's living on a military pension. He's married, but his children are grown. And he doesn't have the money to basically defend himself in this allegation against him. He's been cleared of all of these charges in Colombia. He was cleared in the very beginning because he was the hero of rescuing the Palace of Justice. And I guess I should just quickly tell you what happened that day. Pablo Escobar, who was a very famous drug dealer, teamed up with the M19, which was a terrorist, Marxist terrorist group, and basically stormed the palace, took over the palace, went on the radio, threatening to kill the Supreme Court justices if the president didn't agree to go on trial. They were going to hold a trial against him. And, of course, the president said he would not negotiate with them. And they began shooting the Supreme Court magistrates. They executed 11 Supreme Court magistrates. In all, more than 100 people were killed. But Colonel Plazas was in charge, was told, to lead the unit that went to recover control of the palace. And they rescued about 200 people, more than 200 people. And he was considered a hero. But, here we are 40 years later. The president of the country is former M19. And this guy, who was a hero then, is being dragged into U.S. court, accused of having killed somebody, tortured and killed somebody at the scene with very little, almost no evidence. I mean, he's been tried and investigated in Colombia for many years. There's nothing there. But he doesn't have the resources to defend himself. It will cost probably $600,000 or more to defend himself in this court. And because he doesn't have those resources, and an NGO, a left-wing NGO, is coming after him here in the U.S. with the daughters of this guy who say that he was killed by this colonel, they have very deep pockets. I mean, they have Wilson Sonsini as the law firm. They have this NGO, which is backed by people with a lot of money. And so he may very well have to what they call default, which is what you do in civil court when you can't defend yourself. And I think it's really, really outrageous that the U.S. courts are being abused in this way.
But you're worried about the precedent. So this is a complicated case. It's a case that's specific. And people might go, well, I don't know this guy and I don't know anyone in Colombia. But if this is allowed to happen, you're going to see this everywhere.
Exactly. No, in fact, this is one of the reasons why the judge has let it go, apparently, if I read his readings correctly, is that he believes there's precedent in the 11th Circuit. And again, I think if this colonel had the money to fight this thing all the way, that precedent would be over. That precedent, if it even exists, would be overturned because this is absolutely preposterous. But because he doesn't have the resources and, the George Soros people have very deep pockets, we don't know where this is going to go. But I think it could set a very bad precedent for people wanting to settle grudges in democracies, but in this country because they didn't get what they wanted in their home country.
Finally, Mary, do you think that if someone wanted to control the root causes or anything at the border, they would go 3.5 years and never meet with the head of the Border Patrol? Because that's what the vice president has not met with the head of Border Patrol, visit the border for 15 minutes.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty weak spot for her in her candidacy. I think she will argue that her job was not the border per se, but the root causes. But even there on the root causes claim, she doesn't have much of an argument because, the U.S. State Department in many of these countries tends to side with the anti-development movement. No coal, no electricity, no development. We want you to live in grass huts because we want to preserve the environment. That kind of ideology is very prominent among the Democrats. And I think the failure to develop and to have a rule of law in these countries is the root cause. But I don't see her having worked on that at all.
No, neither have I. Well, I'm going to look harder. Mary O'Grady, going to read your column every Monday. Thanks so much. You can follow her at thanks. Mary Anastasia OG. Thanks, Mary.
Thank you, Brian. Have a great day.
You got it. When we come back, Evidently, when I started the radio show, I did not know I said something on television that was causing an uproar. And of course, I didn't say anything wrong. And everybody knows it. But the idiot that put it up on social media is leaving it up. So when I come back, I'll explain what's happening. Brian Kilmeade Show.
Learning something new every day on the Brian Kilmeade Show. Radio that makes you think. This is the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. So I came up to do radio. I have 6 minutes to get up. I had a few extra minutes today. So I had a chance to get upstairs, and then I get a message from Allison, who's producing the show, and says, Brian, you're trending on Twitter. You might want to look at this. And it turns out this clip is trending on Twitter. I'm going to play the clip, and it's obviously we're pushing back. It's been corrected in almost all circles. And Lawrence Jones, who's on the couch with me, before he was aware of this, was already defending me and telling me how inaccurate this depiction was. But I want you to hear the clip, unedited, and then I'll explain it.
The most recent decision, already you got a question. She will not show up for the prime minister's joint session of Congress today. She'd rather address in the summer a sorority, a college sorority, like she can't get out of that. So that's her decision.
So I said a college sorority, right? No problem. College sorority. This idiot, some jerk, goes out and writes on Twitter. I guess is he Politico? A guy from Politico? He isn't. All right. He's not from Politico. Writes on Twitter that I said colored. Now, you realize, of course, that colored was a term used to describe African Americans in the 19th century. Number one, if I wouldn't even never use that word in my life, if you're listening to what I'm saying, if you know where she's speaking, why would I even say that? But they put that out there and they write that Lawrence Jones was angered by it. Lawrence Jones has since answered, to his credit. And we have pushed back and said what the truth is. But if you hear this clip, this is an example of the of how everybody is looking to jump on other people for no reason. Now, this is a lesson for the Trump camp as well as really for the Trump camp. Anything gender-related, anything race-related, they're going to look for anything where they can label you a racist, a sexist, a segregationist, who knows? But it's not going to stand. People, use your heads. Don't look for something trending on Twitter and just assume it's true. I hope we're smarter than that by now. Special thanks to Media Relations, Lawrence Jones, for pushing back, and Allison for alerting me to it. But if you see this later in the day, I didn't make a mistake. They made a mistake. I make mistakes in this world. You do too. I do. You're on the air. I'm going to be on today 7 straight hours. 3 hours on Fox and Friends, 3 hours on this show, and then I'm doing Outnumbered. There's probably some things that I said on the 5 last night that I bet, well, I probably could have said that better. But it doesn't mean it's wrong. To go and characterize something I said, mischaracterize it, and then make me say something I didn't to the point where it would be beyond politically correct, it would be just flat out wrong to say it. But they actually used a word. I looked it up. Hasn't been used in our country, and I imagine around the world, regularly, in an accepted fashion, since the 1800s. All right? That means my grandfather wasn't even using that word. But I'm supposed to be using it on the couch today, and then you go to town on it. And this clown that wrote it has not taken it back yet. Meanwhile, hopefully you'll see it today and you'll push back on it. Special thanks to Lawrence for speaking up, and I appreciate that. So keep in mind, too, we got a couple of events we're following already, so we're going to bring some clips next hour of the FBI director speaking in front of Congress, giving us some more facts about the shooter, the assassination attempt on Donald Trump's life. We're getting some more facts. I wish people would stop with the politics before they get to their questions. If you give me 5 minutes to ask a question, I'm not going to do politics. I'll do it in the hall and the interviews later, but Nadler and company are doing that. Don't bring up the laptop. Don't bring up the Paul Pelosi hammer attack. Focus on this. We need to get these questions answered. So when those highlights come back, when the testimony continues, we'll bring it back. Brian Kilmeade Show.
From the Fox News radio studios in Midtown Manhattan, it's the fastest growing radio talk show. Brian Kilmeade.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Brian Kilmeade Show. So glad you're here. It comes to you from Midtown Manhattan, heard around the country, heard around the world. Carl Rove is standing by. I don't think anyone could break down what's happening in this fast-paced, breaking news world of politics better than Carl Rove. And at the bottom of the hour, if anyone knows the border better than Tony Gonzalez, I don't know who it is. He's the congressman from Texas, Homeland Security Appropriations Committee, and he's got this gene in him that just wants to get things done. He couldn't care less about politics. And because of that, idiots like Matt Gaetz try to primary him. But believe me, he's one of the good guys who, by the way, spent a couple of decades in the military. So I can't wait to hear from him. There's a short break in Christopher Wray's testimony today about the assassination attempt. I'll bring you back some highlights from what's already happened. He's bringing information, and I think that's important because the Secret Service director sat down there and didn't give any information. In fact, gave more information to a journalist in an interview than she did to Congress, which is really you. Never thought compelled to give a press conference for the last 4 days. I mean, between the President of the United States never giving press conferences to update the American people, forget about journalists, about what their thinking is on the war, about the economy, about inflation, let alone about the election. The president just doesn't talk, doesn't do it. We just accept it, I guess. And now we have this where assassination attempt, you don't feel you have to brief the American public. You know what happens then? Everyone has their own theory. And that's what happens when you don't speak to them, which you know are the facts. Even if you come out and say, this is what I know so far. These are the questions I want to answer. This is what I'm doing to find them. Then we feel like you're in it with us. Carl Rove joins us now. Hey, Carl.
Morning. How are you?
Carl, so much has happened. I thought a lot was happening at the RNC coming up, the assassination attempt. Since that time, first off, the biggest surprise for you over the last few days.
The speed with which Democrats have fallen in line behind Kamala Harris. I thought there would be at least a period during which there'd be some discussion. The second one was I was surprised that President Biden withdrew on Sunday. I was not surprised he withdrew, but I was surprised that he did it before Bibi Netanyahu came and went from town.
Yeah, so I think she deserves credit for that. She got her team out there calling hundreds of lawmakers. And I think that she went and called the people that might have been competing with her, Andy Beshear, Governor Shapiro, Senator Kelly, and said, hey, I'm considering you for a running mate. And he is. And she is, rather. And she consolidated. She's ready to go. And I think that second letter from President Biden saying she's got my endorsement, do you think that played a key role?
It played a role, but I think the main role was that, the big three got behind her, namely Schumer, Hakeem Jeffries, and Nancy Pelosi. They didn't do it at first. They wisely put other people out there first to say Biden ought to withdraw. I mean, I thought it was interesting. Adam Schiff, who's very close to the Speaker Emeritus, was one of the first big voices to go out there, and the first member of the Senate to openly call for Biden to withdraw was Hickenlooper of Colorado, who is, very close to Schumer. So they, the way that they rolled that out made it clear that they were in favor of getting him out, and B, their allies were out there saying Kamala, and they didn't dictate it, they didn't go first, but it was clear that they were encouraging it.
Carl Rove, our guest, obviously. Carl, we already have the battle plan. I've seen two speeches that Kamala Harris, the vice president, has given. Here it goes. Cut one.
We have 105 days until Election Day, and in that time, we've got some work to do. We're not afraid of hard work. We like hard work, don't we? And we will win this election. So as Leah told you, before I was elected vice president, before I was elected United States Senator, I was elected Attorney General of the state of California, and I was a courtroom prosecutor before then. And in those roles, I took on perpetrators of all kinds, predators, who abused women, fraudsters, who ripped off consumers.
And she went on to take those examples and say, well, that's what Donald Trump is. And I guess, Troy, what do you think her approach is with that? Does that thing have legs? Does that attack?
Let's step back for just a minute. This election was tight before the Republican convention, and Donald Trump gained a couple of points in the polls afterwards. And that was when he was facing Joe Biden, whom we all saw on June 27th, the reality of who that man was. So the race was still tight. And she's going to be a more effective attacker than Biden is. She's going to dispel a lot of the doubts that younger voters and black voters and Hispanic voters had about Biden because he was too old and out of touch. And Team Trump doesn't seem to me to be taking this lightly. They're going after her on her record. And that's the smart thing to do. Keep it focused on policy because she's going to come hard, and she's swinging hard and swinging effectively. And this country is narrowly divided. Think about this. The biggest gap, I think, September 12th of 2023 was the last time that Joe Biden was ahead in the Real Clear Politics average of polls. But he has never been, even as a terrible a candidate and as weakened as he was, he has never been more than, say, 2.5 or 3 points behind
right.
Donald Trump in the Real Clear Politics average. And she is going to erase part of that, partly by enthusiasm. People, Democrats who were sort of dispirited, are now back in the game. $100 million raised in small dollar gifts in the first 24 hours and $150 million in new pledges for her super PAC. That says they're enthusiastic. And second of all, she's going to then bring into the Democratic fold some of these younger voters, black voters, to a lesser extent Hispanic voters, who have been dispirited by the choice that they were given, and would like to vote Democrat, but didn't, you know, were not enthusiastic about and were somewhat dispirited about Joe Biden. So this is a horse race, and she's got the advantage of having her convention last. Donald Trump had a good convention. Those average Americans were really powerful. The Republican message was, we're unified. We got concerns about the border. We got concerns about inflation. We are deeply concerned about America's respect, the respect with which America is held around the world. And Donald Trump had, you know, a riveting first 16 or 17 minutes of his speech, but the rest of it was meandering back to the, you know, last 6 or 7 minutes where he returned to his emphasis on unity. So he's taken his shot, and it was a good shot. The convention served the Republican ticket well, but now she's got a shot, and she could. That convention is the 19th of August. So if they have a good convention and they appear to be unified and they have a consistent attack against Donald Trump and they come roaring out of there and have a week of activity before Labor Day, where she's met by big crowds and enthusiasm, this race is already tightening up, and they could be in the lead by Labor Day. And Katie bar the door, because the September 10th debate is not going to be the walk in the park that the first day debate was for Donald Trump.
Right, because the other guy collapsed, and Trump was calm, was very calm.
Yeah.
Just to give you an idea of where she might be, and one thing that President Trump said to me 3 weeks ago is, I said, do you think you're going to go against Joe Biden? If not, what are you preparing for? He says, it doesn't matter, because if it's Kamala Harris, it's the policies. It's the policies that are unpopular. It's going to have the same. It doesn't matter who it is. They'll have the same policies. And I thought that was pretty correct. I want you to hear a little of what Kamala Harris believes. Cut four.
The bill also says, quote, every individual who is a resident of the United States is entitled to benefits for health care services under this act. Not every individual who's a citizen, but every individual who's a resident.
Mm-hmm.
So you support giving universal health care, Medicare for all, to people who are in this country illegally?
Let me just be very clear about this. I am opposed to any policy that would deny in our country any human being from access to public safety, public education, or public health, period.
Decriminalize border crossings. Let's get rid of fracking. $10 trillion for a new Green Deal. She's on the record. These are just three of the things that she has said.
Yeah. Look, she's a left winger. And this is one of the great vulnerabilities. To stop the talk about coronation. Stop the talk about, DEI a choice. Stop all of that and keep focused on the things that people care about. If you're in Pennsylvania and your economy is benefiting from fracking of natural gas, the local steel operation is putting more people on to produce the pipe, there are jobs in the industry that are good-paying jobs, that money's getting spent in your local economy and you feel bolstered. How do you think those people think when she says, I'm going to ban fracking? I'm going to ban it. Hey, how about New Mexico? You want to think why New Mexico is in play? Because Southeast New Mexico and northwest New Mexico depend upon fracking to propel their energy industry. And you know what the largest source of money for the state education budget is? The money from drilling for oil and natural gas in the state of New Mexico. And so you have about a lot of people, Anglos and Latinos both, whose livelihood depends upon that industry. And now you've got somebody who says, yes, I'm going to ban fracking. And also says, I'm going to ban offshore drilling. You want to go down to Houston, Texas, or go over to Louisiana or Mississippi or Alabama and talk to people in the energy industry and see how devastating it would be to those local economies? Go to Alaska. I mean, you know, that may sell well in San Francisco, but it ain't going to sell well in a lot of parts across America.
I mean, at some parts, you might just say that was what I did think until I got into office. I mean, that might be one way to do it. How does she stand by, well, I'm against fracking. I was focused on the root causes. I never spoke to the head of the Border Patrol in 3.5 years, only been to the border once for 25 minutes. I mean, this stuff is going to be almost impossible to defend. Don't you agree?
Yeah. Well, yes, but the point is, stay on those things.
Got it.
Get rid of these little men. Stop saying lion. Stop saying, you know, coup. That's a threat to democracy. All that stuff is baloney. Stay on the things that ordinary Americans care about, particularly the ordinary Americans who are up for grabs in this election. They're people who are desperate for something better. They want to have a leader who says, I have a vision, and I'm going to do this thing right. So the same time that you hit her on the border, lay out the things that sound new. They may not be new, but they sound new and different that cause people to say, well, gee, Donald Trump has a second act in him, and he's going to do something that is going to help make my life better.
By the way, Chris LaCivita, a guy you're very familiar with, will join us tomorrow on the show. So that'll be his first appearance on our radio show, so it'd be great.
Tell LaCivita that I told you embarrassing stories about him. And that unless he gives you a fulsome interview, you're gonna share some of those with your audience.
I'm playing this clip back, and it's going to be on Friday. I just found out, too, while you were talking. Real quick, I want to get to two things. I want to get to Christopher Wray, what he's already said about the assassination investigation. But I do want to get your take on Kamala Harris's decision not to be there for the Prime Minister's address, the Prime Minister of Israel's address at 2 o'clock today.
I think it's a sop to the far left wing anti-Israel portion of the Democratic Party, a mistake. She's the vice president of the United States and the presiding officer of the United States Senate, and she should be there. I think it is an unnecessary slight and small-minded and petty.
How about, do you think it helps her in Michigan?
It might, but look, you know, trying to be micro-oriented, I'm going to try and appease 20,000 people in Ann Arbor by slighting the leader of Israel, diminishes her. It may help her in Dearborn, but it's going to hurt her from, you know, Portland, Maine to, you know, Seattle, Washington, from, you know, San Diego to Miami, among people who are looking for a leader.
Carl, you know how I feel. I'm all in with the Prime Minister. I'm not going to judge where he's fighting a war that I've never been to, that only maybe 12 journalists have seen, and we're believing Hamas's communications arm on what's really happening on the ground, while most of those fighters sit in tunnels. So I am not going to judge the Prime Minister. He literally is fighting for his survival on the Yemen front, on the northern front, on the Iranian front, as well as the Gaza front. And we're going to sit here and judge him. And that's what maybe 20 Democratic lawmakers, including Senator Schumer, are deciding to sit it out. Disgusting. So the other thing happening is Christopher Wray is speaking now to try to explain to Congress what they know about this investigation. Here's some of his remarks.
Why doesn't the FBI disclose to the American people all of the investigative detail and evidence that you are gathering as it is gathered?
Well, we have tried to be transparent with both Congress and the American people as we're going along in the investigation, frankly, unusually so for an ongoing investigation, given the sheer nature of it.
I just don't feel that way. And the thing is, if you had press conferences where you could tell us what you picked up today, almost like when you were running the Persian Gulf War, and what else we need to know. I mean, we have differing accounts about how he got on the roof, differing accounts about how many magazines he had, differing accounts about how many platforms he had encrypted messages with, three of which. Really? Okay. How many people confronted him? What about his car? It was full of explosives. Was it prepared to detonate? Was that part of the plan? Who was the one that lost them? Who did the advance? So these are not hard questions. I'm just a layman who's curious about what happened.
They may be hard questions. I want accurate information rather than piecemeal information. I know the desire in the climate and culture of now that we live in, but I think it's problematic. You know what? If they learn something from somebody and what a source, and it conflicts with another, they got to sort it out. And I know I have trust that Christopher Wray understands the importance of getting it right and getting it quickly. I've seen enough of quote investigations to know that you may start out believing X and you get information that leads you to Y, but you ultimately end up at Q, and that may be all happen within a matter of 3 or 4 days.
So, are you pleased with you now?
Congress wants to get it done, and I understand that, you know, but let's get it right.
Right, but there's certain things. How many magazines were near the body? You had a Secret Service agent there. We saw the video, Carl. What kind of gun was it? Where did he get his gun? When did he get up there? Who confronted him?
Well, we know where he got his gun. His father purchased it.
Got it. Okay. Is that confirmed? I'd like the FBI to confirm that. Okay, that's fine.
Yeah.
Did he ever use it before? And then what about these encrypted platforms? Do they matter? Right. Is he just a gamer? All right, Carl. It's fascinating time. I know now the Democratic Convention's got a lot of interest.
Speaking of information and having to get it right, you've got a misleading introduction to your program. It says from high atop the Fox News headquarters. Buddy, you're on the 10th or 11th or 12th floor. You're not at the top. You're not on the 44th or 45th floor. I think you need to correct that.
15th. But we're not
exactly
at the top.
15th. All right. Exactly.
So all right. Should we do a correction? Should we issue a correction?
I'm going to leave it in your capable hands.
Well, thank you very much. I'm going to get Dana Perino. She's my communications expert. Thanks a lot. Carl Rove, my political expert. Dana Perino, my communications expert. I got everything. Back in a moment.
Diving deep into today's top stories, it's Brian Kilmeade. The fastest 3 hours in radio. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
Just watching some of this testimony with the FBI director. It's just so frustrating to hear them talk about things that have nothing to do with this assassination case. We don't care about your views on guns. And for the most part, I don't think Republicans should bring up the laptop right now. Yeah, you could just say, listen, it's important for you to get to the facts because there's a lot of distrust right now with our institutions. So let's just tell me what you know. Here are the questions. What's it going to take to get the answers? And here's why I'm optimistic we'll get to it. Because no one's blaming the FBI for what happened. They're just asking them to investigate what happened. They looked at the Secret Service and they saw the great courage on the stage, but they wanted to see what happened before he took the stage. That's it. Now, no one's looking to condemn people that don't get paid enough to work way too long and not get an appreciation that they deserve. Obviously, the word is it's hard to recruit. It's hard to retrain to retain these Secret Service agents. Love law enforcement. But in terms of the people that actually strategize the security, obviously it's a problem. Because on that list, on this guy's list, reportedly, was Joe Biden, was Attorney General Merrick Garland.
The talk show that's getting you talking. You're with Brian Kilmeade.
In addition, it appears that around 3:50 p.m., 4 o'clock in that window, on the day of the shooting, that the shooter was flying the drone around the area.
2 hours.
About 11 minutes. I want to be clear, but when I say the area, not over the stage and that part of the area itself, but I would say about 200 yards, give or take, away from that. We think, but we do not know. So, again, this is one of these things that's qualified because of our ongoing review, that he was live streaming, you know, viewing the footage from that, again, about 11 minutes in around the 3:50, 4 o'clock p.m. range.
2 hours before, he's flying a drone in the vicinity of the route.
About 200 yards away, yes.
That's important information.
It is. I did not know that. So he's 200 yards away. I thought it was early in the morning at 10 in the morning. That's the original report. Now we find out it was 2, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. My goodness. President Trump is on stage at 6:09. And I know because I was doing a live show that night and we're waiting. We're trying to figure out, am I going to have a live show? Am I going to get analysis or am I going to be covering the live event? He was supposed to be on at 5, so he was late. So all this is figuring into it because we're getting more information People's cell phone video is helping. Senator Grassley letting out information is helping, because the assassination investigation should not be buried in the plethora of legitimate big news that we are being overwhelmed with right now. Before I bring in my guest, I want to play one more cut about the assassination, because this is what Senator Grassley put out, also what Fox News is able to obtain. I want you to hear. I want you to hear this. Now, let me describe it. There's a man in a black suit, red tie. He looks like a Secret Service agent wearing the glasses, standing on top of what seems to be the assassin's body, which is about 2-3 feet away. And he's talking to another police officer. Cut 39.
Yes, yeah, Beaver County sniper seen him, sent the pictures out. This is him.
Okay.
That's the sniper that sent the original pictures and seen him come from the bike and set the book back down and then lost sight of him.
Okay.
He's the one that sent the pictures out. I don't know if you got the same ones I did.
I think I did, yeah. He's like got his glasses on.
So we had the picture of that.
I got that.
Okay, and then this is his bike with the stuff. And our sniper seen him walking away from that, I believe.
Okay.
But he would be right inside that window. He's the one that physically seen this, sent the pictures, and called it out.
Okay.
So he's describing the whole thing, giving us a lot of information right there. Let's bring in Congressman Tony Gonzalez of Texas. Congressman, welcome back. Your thought about what we've learned so far and what we didn't learn on Monday, and we resulted in the resignation of the Secret Service director.
Thank you, Brian, for having me back on. And you hit it right on the head. This, I understand there's a lot of news that has flown the last week or so. We can't let this get swept under the rug. The American people deserve to know the truth. And this drone is just the latest layer. The world has changed. The way people operate has changed. Just look to the war in Ukraine. These drones are a factor into all these different attacks in one form or another. Secret Service and other agencies, they got to get on board with the latest technologies on how to combat against these. And we can't keep things in a silo. It reminds me a lot of pre-9/11, where all these agencies, where everything's perfectly fine, and then all of a sudden it's not. I mean, just think back to recently, October 7th. You know, the Israelis, they thought everything was fine. We have to get on the front end of it and be able to share information with the public, as well as hold people accountable. I sit on the Appropriations Committee. The Secret Service gets their funding through my committee. We need to have real actions, real results, not just some resignation that was already, in many cases, I thought was predetermined.
Right. And the fact that she showed up, didn't want to get any information. I don't want to backtrack.
Mm-hmm.
But what questions do you have? Number one, how did you lose somebody that was suspicious? Then we find out from Secret Service people, we get a lot of suspicious people at every event. Number two, why was the perimeter so close? These are layman questions. I'm proud to say I don't have the background, but I just want to know enough to ask the right questions. So I can't picture a perimeter that would allow that building to be on the other side of it. And then I hear stories where an agent was up on the roof, but it was so hot he got down. And that's what left the building open. And this guy didn't have to go through the magnetometers because he was outside the perimeter. He showed up in a bike and a satchel. That's where the gun looks like it was, because they keep talking about a bike. They said he had a ladder, but they said he didn't need a ladder because they hop up on the air conditioner. So there's a lot of things that took place that really are disturbing.
And it all doesn't line up. And you're going, wait a second here. This is not only a presidential candidate, it is a former president. So if a former president is getting this level of security, what is a member of Congress getting? And then you go a step further. Okay, what is me as an American, if I go into a baseball game, what kind of level of security am I getting? Once again, the world has changed. The threats are changed. We have to change with it. We have to take this moment as it should be. I'm a former Navy guy, so I take it as a shot over the brow, right? Thank God that President Trump is okay, but we cannot let the news cycle sweep this under the rug. And we have to let the public know, as we're uncovering facts, as we're doing things, the public has to be a part of it.
So, you know, the one thing I always knew in the Middle East, as complicated it was, I always knew who the good guys were, Israel. So they were the democracy. They were trying to get peace. They might not do everything right, but I understand the objective in which they want it. The two-state solution was going to work. It was going to work in the 90s with Clinton. And Yasser Arafat made it clear, if I signed off on this, I'd be assassinated the next day. And that nothing has changed since.
Right.
So we are now in a situation where Israel's being threatened from the north with Hezbollah. From Gaza, they've already attacked. For Houthi rebels are lobbing drones and missiles. And Iran has already hit once. And they're fully in support of all these rebel groups out to destroy Israel. but yet you have about 20 lawmakers, including Senator Schumer and Vice President Kamala Harris and Nancy Pelosi, who will not show up when the prime minister addresses Congress today. Why?
It is bad. There are also even some Republicans, too, sadly enough, Brian. But this is one of the
J.D. Vance is going to miss, but he's campaigning.
No.
Is there anybody else protesting?
Yeah. Yeah, I know there may be a House member or two that's not going to go. But what I'm getting at is we can't just say we stand with Israel or you know, we can't just say we stand with our allies. There has to be actions that back it up. And I mean, you mentioned these. Israel is under attack. I mean, Iran launched, you know, weapons against Israel. They didn't talk about it. They didn't yell it in the streets. They did it. And so now is not the time where we back down. And the left, you hit it right on the head. You know, the fact that that Kamala Harris isn't going to be there and she is deliberately trying to send a message to their base, it shows exactly where they are at with Israel, not only with Israel, all of our allies. I mean, they've abandoned many people. I certainly know that being along the border, how they've abandoned us. But it is dangerous, Brian, because what happens in Israel, that is a foreshadow of what can and will happen here.
When the Grand Ayatollah praises the protesters in America and the college students, you know, you should know that you're on the wrong side. And that's what the Grand Ayatollah of Iran is. These used to be no-brainers. So Dov Hikind, who's a New York State representative Democrat, said this on our air today, Cut 34.
It's amazing. These protesters are being applauded today by Hezbollah, by Hamas, Islamic Jihad, Iran, Sinwar. That's really what they're accomplishing. Sinwar is thrilled to see what's going on in America. And it is shameful. It is pathetic. That the vice president will not be at the joint session of Congress. Again, it gives a victory to Israel's enemies while Israel is fighting really for its survival on so many different fronts.
That's a befuddled Jewish American that votes Democratic. I don't know how big the Jewish population is in Texas, Congressman, but do you sense they've been rattled to the point where they understand what party is supporting Israel?
I do. I actually attend the Jewish Community Center. I'm Catholic, but I go to the JCC in San Antonio, and there's actually a large Jewish community, a growing Jewish community in Texas. What the clip you just said there, the person you just said, they're not talking about peaceful people that want a solution. I mean, you're talking about terrorist organizations and groups that fundamentally hate Israel and want them to not exist. I mean, you cannot sit down with people like that. I mean, there is no negotiating with terrorists. You have to be firm in your actions. I would argue, of course, Israel wants peace. Of course, the Jewish people want peace, but they also want security. And none of their children, need to be in a position where they can't go to sleep at night, not knowing if they're going to wake up in the morning. And once again, what happens over there in the Middle East certainly impacts us. You've seen that with our children get ignited. I'm here in D.C., and, you know, you're seeing some of the people, kind of the protesters, if you will. They have no idea. They couldn't even tell you where Palestine is on a map. You know, they can't tell you where Gaza is. They can't tell you. They've been poisoned. Their minds have been poisoned and hijacked. These are the threats that we have to combat against.
So we have Kamala Harris is going to be the Democratic nominee, and one of the main things she was asked to do is to crack down on the border. She's gone once for 25 minutes, and she has never spoken to the head of Border Patrol. The only time she spoke out is when she thought the Border Patrol on horses were whipping Haitians. She was totally wrong, never apologized. But she says, my focus just on root causes. How effective has she been?
0% effective. Yeah, Kamala Harris has failed at that job. And I think even Joe Biden figured that out and just goes, you know what, why don't you just sit this one out? And we'll have someone else take it over. Clearly, that didn't help as well. But when she visited El Paso, which is part of my district, okay, my district stretches from San Antonio to El Paso. When she visited El Paso, she touched down on the tarmac in El Paso. They did a press conference. And at this press conference, this is what they said, Brian. They said, welcome to the new Ellis Island. Okay, this is all what they wanted. So, you know, $100 million. isn't going to change the fact that she and this administration, Kamala Harris and the Biden administration, has caused this border crisis and so many American lives to be turned upside down. They cannot run from that. You know, they cannot run from their record. They cannot run from the fentanyl that has killed people and the amount of folks on the terrorist watch list that are pouring over into our streets. No matter what they do, they cannot run for that. Once again, in her own words, this is the new Ellis Island. This is what they wanted.
Right. And this is what they got. They have, and with the former president says, they have bulldozed, they've demolished the southern border, let alone selling off what was left of a border wall that they should have paid for. So they never pressured the Central and South American countries. You told me you were working with Mexico because Mexico has relations with Venezuela in order to get them to slow down the exodus from that collapsed country. I mean, there was no movement from the State Department due to what congressman from Texas is doing.
And it shouldn't be that way. But you know what? Once again, like Congress, like we can't wait for someone to come save the day. You know, we got to be able to be proactive and get ahead of it. I'm actually visiting Mexico again in the coming months to visit with the new incoming president of Mexico and some other folks. She is a hard left, you know, leaning person. It's not like we agree on a lot of things. I'm just trying to go, hey, look, I need your help, because if we go down this route where Mexico is viewed as a failed state, which many people do, this is not going to go well for anyone. So let's get ahead of this. But the issue is this administration led by Kamala Harris has done nothing. All they've done is cause chaos and havoc. The amount of people, these Venezuelan gangs, TDA, the Tranda Agua, this is a real threat that is impacting regular American lives.
Can you imagine? It's a congressman who just wants to do things for the country. Congressman Tony Gonzalez, thanks so much. Meanwhile, when we come back, I'm going to find out if there's other news breaking. I think the answer is yes, and then outnumbered.
Breaking news, unique opinions. Hear it all on the Brian Kilmeade Show.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm going to be on Outnumbered at the top of the hour, and I look forward to that. We start waiting for a couple hours until Benjamin Netanyahu speaks. I'm just sinking in now. Senator Schumer, the highest-ranking Jewish American to ever ascend as majority leader in the Senate, is not going to the speech. Is that insane? Can't back Israel? I'm talking about the prime minister to a joint session of Congress. So let's find out, being that I have some time, you know the big stories. Find out if there's indeed a reason for you to know more.
More to know.
All right. First, congratulations to Fox News. We posted the highest rated week since 2020 election in both day and primetime viewers during the week of July 15th, which includes analysis of the assassination on President Trump, the Republican National Committee, President Biden dropping out of the race. Fox News occupied 70% of the audience share in primetime viewers and 66% of the total day. Now, I mean, that's just not beating MSNBC and CNN and CNBC. It is beating everybody from the Cartoon Network to ESPN. That they have put together an unbelievable team here at Fox News. Next, ESPN's top 100 athletes of the 21st century is out. Let's take a look at it now of the 21st century. All right, so Tom Brady is 5, LeBron is 4, Messi is 3, Serena Williams is 2, and Michael Phelps is 1. Other people notable: Candace Parker is 60, Ray Lewis is 61, Aaron Rodgers is 91, Ed Reed of the Ravens is 99. John Jones is 66. Pete, do you have a problem with this?
Not necessarily a problem with it, but it's, I don't know. I always find these questionable to begin with, and they always have to try to make some statements sometimes with their picks, as opposed to being objective, which is what it's supposed to be, based on athletic performance, not on whether you like somebody or don't.
Right. Michael Phelps, absolute dominant. No one's ever seen a team like it, but people bring up, well, it's not a sport that a lot of people participate in. Unbelievable athlete. Next, the WNBA All-Star Game scores the third highest audience in league history, a ratings jump of 300%. According to the Front Office Sports, the game grew 3.4 million viewers. The previous record was 2003, 1.4. Additionally, this year's numbers are 300% increase. Does anybody know why that could be? Pete, I'm sorry to cut. Do you have AI Do you have Google anywhere? Can anyone look up why that would be?
These initials are popping into my head. Yeah. CC. I don't know why.
Could it be Caitlin Clark? Will somebody say in the league that they appreciate her besides Caitlin Clark's family? I love that women's sports is getting this attention. Please note the people that are making it happen. Next, the person, I should say. So get the. I don't know if you've seen this video. A hypothermal explosion violently shook part of Yellowstone National Park. I've been there. It's called the Biscuit Basin. So you walk on this footbridge, and all of a sudden you see this natural explosion. And then people must have thought, wow, this is some type of subversive act, but it isn't. The explosive occurred at 10 o'clock local time on Monday, right near the Black Diamond Pool, the Biscuit Basin, as well as boardwalks of the parking lot, are closed for visitors for a while. It's volcanic activity. It is pretty wild to see. Next. This can't be true. Desperate parents are considering dumpster diving and theft to avoid paying for their kids' supplies. A survey of 2,000 U.S. parents of elementary school ages found that 77% believe staying under their budget is a top priority, and the top resources parents have used to keep back-to-back school shopping under control, purchasing school supplies wherever they can get them on sale, even back-to-school season, 49%, and shopping a multitude of stores, best deals, 45%. Other people, 12%, admitted to stealing supplies from their workplace so their kid could use them. Over half would also be willing to save money by group buying school supplies, which is cool. The most likely supplies to be group bought inside, pens and pencils, 67%. They also are considering, 49% say shopping at multiple stores would do it for them, but then you are spending more gas. The dumpster diving, stealing, I don't think if work doesn't really miss it, I don't really see it as a big problem. Outnumbered now.
Hey, it's Clay Travis. Join me for Outkick, the show, as we dive deep into a mix of topics. New episodes available Monday to Friday on your favorite podcast platform. And watch directly on outkick.com/watch.
Listen to the show ad-free on Fox News Podcast Plus, on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music with your Prime membership, or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.